I look at a lot of my friends that are in their late 30s, early 40s. They've got young families, they've got mortgages, they're trying to keep their jobs, get promoted, earn the money, look after their kids, keep their partners and their marriages together, look after maybe elderly parents. And at the same time, they're trying to keep themselves mentally, physically well. Christ, no wonder people are having breakdowns and burning out and feeling exhausted, overwhelmed and completely fatigued. How can we move from this crisis and this sort of overwhelmed burnout that you speak about into a more of a life that's more peaceful, content, and is it realistic?
If you're feeling stressed and you're overwhelmed and you're tired, like, don't dismiss that and keep pushing through. Let's start thinking about what are the reasons why you're feeling like this and what can we do about it. So I think the first step is...
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Career Confidence Podcast today. It honestly means the world to me. Now, before we dive into today's episode, I wanted to let you know about something I have been working on behind the scenes. So as you know from listening, I am writing a book called The Bold Move. And alongside the book, I am also developing something that is really going to help people in this current world of work. Now, what I'm hearing from so many people is there is a lot of uncertainty, there's fear, there's lack of confidence, lack of clarity. People are generally concerned about their careers and what the world is going to look like over the next 5 or 10 years. And no wonder, because stats like 44% of workers are going to have to change careers by 2028, according to the World Economic Forum. 300 million jobs could be impacted by AI globally. And then the fact that, according to LinkedIn, 60% of professionals don't know what their next step should be. It's no surprise that there is a lot of confusion in the market right now, and I really want to do everything in my power to help. So alongside an amazing team, I've created a AI-powered career mentor called Pivotr, spelled P-I-V-O-T-R, pivotr.com. And what this tool is going to give you is everything you need to succeed in this new world of work. Whether you're looking to pivot into a completely different industry, learn AI and make sure you're staying ahead in your career, pivot up in your current industry, go for that promotion, or even a pivot project, you want to launch your own thing, Pivotr is going to be your career mentor in this new uncertain world of work. It's going to give you that clarity. It will give you that personalized roadmap and break it down into weekly sprints so you know exactly what to do to get you to where you want to be. It's also going to have voice enablement so you can chat to Pivotr anytime you need that little bit of comfort, clarity, certainty. The AI tool and Pivotr is going to be there to support you and guide you every single step of the way. Now, we are only looking for a handful of people to test the product as it's in very, very early stages. So if you'd like to be involved, please go to pivotr.com. We'll make sure that we put it in the show notes and reach out to me if you'd like to know more about the tool I'm creating. But I really, really am looking forward to launching this. And as the listeners of the Career Confidence Podcast, you'll be the first to know when the tool is ready for you. So go to pivotr.com, check it out, pop your name on that early access list. You do not want to miss out on the opportunity to be one of the first to use this. Your feedback is going to be very, very valued and will shape the future of this product. So thank you so much again for tuning in today. And now over to today's episode. Dr. Marnie, welcome back to the Career Confidence Podcast. We were saying before we hit record how much the last conversation was just so enjoyable. We spoke to such relevant topics around burnout and how to overcome exhaustion. And, you know, people are sort of, unfortunately, I think, still feeling a little bit burnt out, a little bit exhausted. There's a lot of uncertainty in the world. And since we last spoke, you've gone on to write another book, Crisis to Contentment. Love that title, which we're going to go on to talk about today. But get us up to speed. What's been happening with yourself since we last spoke, apart from this amazing book, of course?
Oh, of course, of course. I mean, we could speak all day about how people are feeling, couldn't we? Particularly in the last few years. Pity podcasts don't go for that long because, yeah, I could literally speak for days about it because I just hear so many stories about how people are feeling. So I guess I really get my fingers on the pulse of what's going on in society. And I think so many people have been speaking about burnout, particularly kind of post-pandemic. But, yeah, I think a lot of people are really struggling through adulthood. So I guess for me as a psychologist who works with people and listens to people and hears those stories, why not, kind of run presentations in workplaces on it, because that's what I spend the majority of my time doing. But also, of course, writing about it because there's so many people that will never go and see a psychologist for a variety of reasons. It might be cost related or access related, or they just feel like they're too busy. So I always like to listen to what people are feeling and what they're thinking and write about it and speak about it. So that's what I've been doing since we last spoke, is writing and thinking and really listening to what society is going through and thinking about what, you know, I could do and other psychologists can do to kind of help and support.
Amazing. And I think the key thing that I really want to get through to everyone today is that if anyone is struggling right now, you are not alone. Yeah. And I think you're the perfect person to illustrate this. So what are you hearing in the world right now? What are people struggling with? What are they coming to you with? What's sort of like a theme or pattern that you're going, this is interesting. This isn't just one patient. This is a lot of people saying this to me. So what is like a theme that's running through our society right now?
Yeah, you're so correct, because there's themes, isn't there? I mean, everyone's different, but when you hear similar stories or similar presentations, you're like, oh, that's a thing, you know, mm-hmm. That's a thing that people are going through. And so even when I'm out, so I've got like individual people that I work with where you hear the really vulnerable stories, but even when I'm like talking to a big group and I'm like, how are you feeling? The top word that is kind of thrown at me is overwhelmed. So the people are overwhelmed. People go, I'm tired. I'm exhausted, I'm burnt out. So these are kind of the things that kind of are thrown at me. Of course, there's people out there that go, I'm fine, I'm happy, which is great. But I think when you hear those other emotions about how people are feeling, plus the tiredness and exhaustion, that's really telling you. But I think with individuals, what I'm finding is when I'm really tapping into their stories, particularly, I guess, people in midlife, they're like, they're tired, exhausted, but they're like kind of frustrated about what's going on in the world, like almost like a frustrated disappointment, like, oh my gosh, there's so many crises going on. God, is this going to ever, is this ever going to end? That kind of feeling, like, oh my gosh, another world event, another kind of climate, environmental kind of issue that we're dealing with. So I think it's all the things, and people are getting tired, feeling really stressed, and getting a little bit frustrated and also irritated as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm. There's some such strong words there. And I'm really aware of language, and I want to sort of talk about this as well, because I think language and how we frame things is really, really powerful. And I think I've been doing so much thinking about this, because I as I said last time to you, I did struggle with anxiety for a few years in my late 20s, all down to overworking, pressure, all of that I put on myself. But I was really grateful for that period I went through, because I learned some tools and some strategies and some ways that I can overcome moments where I am feeling overwhelmed, exhausted, or I can even spot them now before I get to that state. Do you think part of the issue in our society is that we're not taught to deal with these tough life challenges? So when they hit us, and they keep on hitting us at the moment, we just don't know what to do. And we just go, where do I turn? Who can I turn to help? Like, why are we struggling so much in society right now?
Exactly. And I think we're just conditioned, aren't we, from a very young age, probably from our families, just, but society in general, particularly now with social media, it's almost like everything's about happiness, isn't it? And we're positively reinforced for happiness and those positive emotions. And, you know, and then yeah, we're marketed, you know, if you buy my stuff, you'll be happy or happy again. So I think society kind of praises us when we're happy and joyous and all those kind of perceived positive emotions. But some of those perceived negative emotions like frustration and fear, you know, that kind of anxious, kind of fearful, that the feeling of uncertainty, you know, anger, all those types of emotions, it's almost like even as kids, we're kind of told off for having them, aren't we? Or you're not positive reinforced. You're either kind of punished or it's ignored. So, yeah, I think we've grown up and when we go out into the adult world and we naturally are reacting to things that are going on in our life and we're feeling angry and we're feeling confused and we're feeling frustrated and we're feeling sad and we're feeling shame. And there's all these feelings that we're, but we don't know what to do with that. So we're reaching for often unhelpful coping mechanisms to soothe ourselves. And what better thing to do is to reach for, it's not always those vices like drugs and alcohol. It's, you know, reaching for Netflix and watching over and over and over again, you know, to kind of soothe ourselves and going to sleep way too late, or we're scrolling around on our phone and we're doing all these things to soothe ourselves rather than listening to those, listening to what those emotions are actually telling us and then doing something about it. Those mm-hmm. emotions are as important as the other ones, the happy. And, the, you know, like anger is a powerful emotion and we need to listen to it. Don't dismiss it. Otherwise it will keep coming back and biting you on the bottom.
100%. And I read something the other day that we like say something like anger. It's like, there's nothing wrong with anger, but anger has a dark side called aggression. And if we suppress the anger, the frustration, the sadness,
yes,
it's going to get worse. And it's interesting, like, obviously you're the expert on all of this, but I was having a conversation the other day with someone who researches happiness. And what he's discovered is that it's more about the self-awareness, the emotional intelligence. It's naming the emotions, like you're saying, I feel sad, I feel angry. But again, so many people don't have that emotional intelligence. You know, we're praised in school to get A's, B's and C's, but we're not praised to really identify, how am I feeling right now? You know, like, we don't have these conversations in school. So then we reach adulthood and we've still got all of these emotions. We can't even name them, let alone identify how we feel. And it just sort of manifests in depression, anxiety, overwhelm, burnout. That's my theory anyway, but I'd love to get your thoughts on it.
Yeah, no, definitely, definitely. Yeah, we grow up in the way that, yeah, our small kind of family unit or the close people around us or how society has been dealing with those emotions that we've been feeling. So some of us have learned to kind of let rip with them and scream and shout because that's what was done in our house rather than, you know, listen to it and control it and channel it in a socially acceptable way. Other of us have hid it and shoved it under the rug, and that's what we continue to do as an adult. So rather than being curious and kind of going, oh, why am I angry? Say, for example, you're angry at your partner or something that's happened. Instead of thinking about it and pondering and wondering what that emotion's about, some people might hide it away and not speak about it. And then it seeps out, doesn't it, in other ways, like it might like aggression or something, or manifest its way into something other unhelpful thing rather than being curious about it and thinking about what's actually making me feel like this and can I do something about it. So, yeah, we don't get taught that at schools, do we? I think schools are getting better in terms of talking about emotions, but, yeah, I think probably in schooling they're still teaching things that probably are less helpful in today's world. And we need to be doing more of that.
Yeah, I completely agree. And Do you think it's partly that we almost become identified with our emotions? Like, I'm a sad person, I'm an angry person, and that almost sort of like becomes our identity. And then once it's our identity, it's hard to break more of those negative, I don't even want to call them negative, more of those lower vibrational emotions that we don't necessarily want to feel all the time.
Yeah, there's a slow becoming, isn't it? And that's why I like to talk about emotions a lot, because if we don't think about them a little bit more, and if we don't have that self-awareness and kind of think about why we could be feeling like that, there is a slow becoming, isn't there? There's a slow becoming. We start becoming kind of a fearful person, or would become a grumpy person, when if we just kind of listened to that earlier on and acknowledged it and did something with that information, that, because that's what emotions are. They're chemical messengers, aren't they? They're telling us about our place and our reaction to what's going on in our life. So that's valuable information that we need to tap into, and then we can do something about it and go back to being a range of emotions, not just one big stagnant, grumpy person or angry person, and that becomes our identity. Yeah, we want to be able to feel all of the emotions, even angriness and frustration and those sorts of ones, and disappointment. You're allowed to feel like that, but you don't want to be a disappointed person for the rest of your life. You want to feel all the other things and leave room for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because when I look back on my sort of phase of anxiety, I would say I was actually almost addicted to worrying. Mm. Like, it just became part of my day.
Yeah.
You know, like, I just be like, I'm worried about this and I'm worried about that. And it did almost sort of become sort of part of my sort of personality, I guess. And it took a long time. I saw a therapist, I had hypnosis, I did meditation, I did, you know, got enough sleep and exercise and all the things you're supposed to do. And it really helped. And I'm so grateful I did all of it, because I don't identify with that person anymore. And I don't sit and worry about the worst case scenario. I have my moments, like we all do, when things happen, exactly. But it doesn't go on for weeks, and I don't spiral now. Whereas before, God, where my mind would go would be shocking, like the worst case scenario.
Exactly. But it takes a kind of a massive disruption of sorts to change that way. Because like you said, like you almost didn't know who you are without that chemical composition, because you've done it so many times. And we almost become wired for that chemical composition. It's like we become addicted to that feeling. We don't know ourselves without worrying, for example, you know, to your example. So to be someone different the next day, it's going to take a lot of work, doesn't it? It takes a lot of work to not be that emotion the next day. So the earlier we get in to know what our emotions are and why we're having them, and then have a bit of a psychological toolkit to tap into so that we can pivot on those emotions and change it up a little bit, then, yeah, we're going to struggle a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And do you think, and this is going to bleed onto your book now, that it gets harder as we go through our lives? And I was thinking about this the other day when I knew that we were going to have this conversation. Something happened at 35, and I don't know if that's what we class as midlife, but for me, 35 was a really interesting birthday. I don't know what happened at 35, but I suddenly sort of thought to myself, right, what are you doing? Suddenly everything felt a bit more magnetized. Everything suddenly felt a bit more like it's time to pick one thing. It's time to go think about your future and your finances, and time to grow up, which was interesting. But before 35, I don't know why, I just was like, maybe a little bit more like footloose and fancy free, but something happened at 35. Now, gratefully, I'd done a lot of work up until that point, so I had quite a lot of tools and I'd overcome, and I sort of knew who I was and what I wanted at that point. But I think we do hit these moments in our lifetime, and they can happen at different points for us, where we sort of start questioning things. Maybe we're not where we want to be. Maybe, you know, we have some friends that are further ahead and we start feeling like a failure. So
yeah,
what happens at quote unquote midlife, and what do you see as midlife? Because 35, definitely not middle of my life, but it was, I remember it as a birthday of like, 35, I'm not in my early 30s anymore. And it was just a moment. I thought, Christ, how am I going to feel when I'm 40?
I wonder if that was a quarter life crisis even, because there is talk, like, because we're living longer now, it's not just the midlife crisis that some of us go through. There's a quarter life where you get to kind of like end of your 20s, early 30s, and you're like, there's a kind of there's a lot going on where you start to kind of evaluating what's going on and measuring yourself against the kind of peers and things like that. So, yeah, that could be part of it as well. But, you know, like midlife, it's very subjective. I don't even know what age we could call midlife. It could be anything from kind of 30 to, and I know people who are 70 and they go, don't call me old, I'm still middle age. So let's have a window of 30 to 70, shall we?
Yeah, done.
Sure, should we say that?
Yes.
Yes, we'll say that. So, and yeah, there's a lot going on, I think. I think it is generally kind of adulthood where there's so much going on, particularly in the modern age. Adults now have so much on their plate. So I think when you think about, you know, the term midlife crisis, apparently it's been quite debunked now, the term. People don't have a midlife crisis. And that's why when I was writing about a midlife crisis, I really focused on just all the mini crises that we have through our adulthood, because, you know, like our chat about emotions, and my book is very much about emotions and how we're feeling at this time of our life. There's many things that are happening. There's so much change, isn't there? And possibly a lot of disruption and life events where in the heat of the moment when we're going through stuff, plus having a lot on our plate, we are feeling these emotions, and we're all the words that we've already thrown around today. We're angry at times, and we're tired at times, and we're overwhelmed at times. And this can become quite a crisis point if we don't know what to do with those emotions. Like if you're like, say, 42 and you've got a full load because you're taking care of kids and you're looking after elderly parents and you've got a full-time job, and you're absolutely tired, you just need one more life event and you're just like, I've had enough right now, I can't. So you get to that crisis point. So that's what I wanted to really channel into, is all the emotions that we go through on our adult journey and making sure that we tap into those emotions so we can do something with it in a positive way.
Well, it's just such a, that sort of whole midlife, they say, isn't it, that it's the most unhappiest for a lot of people. It's actually when your happiness dips the most. And I think like I look at a lot of my friends that are in their late 30s, early 40s, they've got young families, they've got mortgages. Mortgage rates have been high for the last 18 months in Australia. Like they're trying to keep their jobs, get promoted, earn the money, look after their kids, keep their partners and their marriages together, look after maybe elderly parents, like,
yeah,
God. And at the same time, they're trying to keep themselves mentally, physically well. They're trying to dress well, keep up with the Joneses. Like, Christ, no wonder people are having breakdowns and burning out and feeling exhausted, overwhelmed, and,
exactly,
you know, completely fatigued. So there's probably a lot of people they're listening to this right now, and maybe they aren't sort of totally overwhelmed, but maybe some days they just go, oh, I just need a break from life, from people. How can we move from this sort of crisis and this sort of like overwhelmed burnout that you speak about into a more of a life that's more peaceful, content? And is it realistic? Is it a fantasy now? Like, I'd love to get your thoughts on it.
Yeah. You know, like you said and I said, there's so much on people's plate, and in the modern adult, it's very different to, it's almost like when you, and I know every era has lots going on, but I think we were probably more connected as a community, you know, 50 plus years or more, and we had the village. We had more defined roles. you know, I think it was a different society. Whereas now, yeah, there's so much going on, and with longevity as well means that, yeah, we could be caregivers, but also caring for parents and working full time. So there's a lot. There's no one size fits all approach to this, because I think, you know, there might be advice out there saying you can have it all, you know, all those sorts of things. And I just think, oh my gosh, like, you know, even there's time, and this is why I wrote the book as well. There's even times where I just look at my day and I think, oh my golly gosh, like, I don't know how this day is going to happen because there's just too much. And inevitably as well, if you've got a full schedule, something else gets thrown in, you know, like a pet has to go to the vet, or, you know, a kid rings up, you know, from school and they need to be picked up. And you just think, oh my gosh. So I say to people, I think that self-awareness is so important. And I talk a lot about this, is don't dismiss those feelings of overwhelm, because I think that's what we do as well, is we're thinking that we should be coping with everything and we should be able to do everything that's on our plate, and we're watching all the shiny people on social media saying, you know, if you take this pill, then you have your energy back, and if you can have it all. So I think we're still shoving those emotions under the rug way too much when we need to start listening to them. You know, if you're feeling stressed and you're overwhelmed and you're tired, like, don't dismiss that and keep pushing through. Start listening to it, and that's where I start going, okay, let's start thinking about what are the reasons why you're feeling like this and what can we do about it. So I think the first step is, yeah, to your question, is listen to those emotions and sit with them a little bit. Don't mm-hmm. shove them aside.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's sort of where it all stems from, is like, once you're aware of something, you have the power to change it. And I think I shared this last time. I have like a, not every morning, I'm not perfect, but most mornings, I'd say 5 mornings out of 7, I sit in a meditation practice, and it is amazing what comes up. And I've been meditating now for like 5 years, and I still, my mind some mornings is just chatting away, chat, 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 one thought, next thought, next thought. And I'm just like, they're the mornings where I just sit a little while longer, because I know that frantic energy, if I am just sort of like start my day with all those conflicting thoughts of everything I've got to do that day, yes, that's the energy I bring into the day. Okay. And then it's just a case of ticking off the to-dos as quickly as possible. What's next? What's next? And by the end of the day and the end of the week on a Friday, I don't want to socialize. I don't want to see anyone at the weekend. I'm exhausted. Whereas if I start my day thinking, right, what's the number one priority today? Just the one thing that just needs to happen. And everything else is secondary. It just kind of like reframes it to be like, I haven't got to focus on all of these things. I just got to pick one.
Exactly.
And then once I've done that one, I get that sense of achievement. Okay, what's the next priority? It's like, if we just look at our to-do list, we don't know where to start. But I think some people can overwhelm themselves because they just have this massive to-do list and think, I'm never going to get through this.
Exactly.
But there's always that one thing that's going to make the most difference. And I think we just need to start prioritizing our time better, and being more aware of where we're spending it and what's conflicting and what's actually not that important. And often it's our emails, it's the colleagues that sort of loading up your work with it. It's the meeting that's been added into your calendar. You know, it's learning to say, actually, no, I've got my day planned, and do I really need to be on that meeting? And I think sometimes it's okay to push back. We need to take some ownership of that.
For sure, for sure. And it is, it's intentional living, isn't it? And conscious living. Because I think, yeah, in the busy world, when we have a lot on our plate, we're very reactive, aren't we, rather than proactive. So if we were all 100% honest, we probably could construct our day in a lot more of a healthier way than we do, because mm-hmm. we're just reacting to how we're feeling at the time with the demands that are placed on us. But, and this is why sometimes those disruptions, and I talk about this in my last book, in the burnout book, is sometimes something like burnout makes you start thinking about how you live your life more intentionally afterwards, because otherwise you would have kept going at that pace. So something had to stop you. So sometimes these really hard moments are a catalyst for living life more intentionally going forward. So this is why this is such an important discussion, is It's instead of being reactive to how you feel and with what the demands are placed on you, it's really thinking about how you want to live your life. And even if it's the smallest little things can make a difference. So, you know, to your point, those slow mornings for some people, and this, there's no one size fits all approach as well. So, you know, for some people who have very busy days, maybe to push them out of those kind of overwhelming feelings, it is to, you know, maybe get up 15 minutes earlier and do a meditation practice, or even just slowly eat their breakfast instead of standing at the kitchen counter having the Vegemite and toast. It's actually just easing into the day so you're feeling, you know, feeling more at ease, and then the course of the day usually flows better than rush, rush, rush and being stressed from, you know, the get-go. Whereas for other people, it might be, you know, making sure that they have a lunch break. The amount of people that don't have a lunch break just blows my mind, and they sit at their computer having lunch without just having a relax, you know, kind of rejuvenating, reset, fueling up away from their desk moment. Like, so many busy people don't do that. But maybe for another person, maybe, for example, they're feeling like they're not doing enough because they feel like they're at home with little kids and they really want to be challenged. So maybe to disrupt that feeling, it is, you know, watching a documentary or something when, or reading a book, like consciously when their baby's asleep, just so that they're getting some kind of intellectual stimulation, and that will help. Or, you know, something, there's no one size fits all approach, and that's why we have to listen to how we feel and consider what we could actually incorporate into our schedule that's going to actually help us for our situation at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think everyone's got a different, obviously, set of values as well, right? And I think when I look back on the time of my life when I was at my worst anxiety, I was commuting an hour into work, an hour back in an office, 8:30, 5:30, couldn't leave before 5:30. It was a very strict sales environment. I had, you know, so I was trying, I didn't take a lunch break because I was just like, you know, telling myself I'm a high performer and I've got to be at my desk from 8:30 to 5:30 and quickly rush down, get myself a coffee. And I look back at that time of my life and I did that for 4 years straight. It's no wonder I had anxiety. I literally was just running on adrenaline. Adrenaline the whole time. I didn't know how to stop. I didn't know how to be. I didn't know how to just take a breath. I don't think I breathed into my belly once in those 4 years because it was just go, go, go in the fast lane. And it's just not sustainable. And the one thing that good that came from COVID was the fact that work changed, that now we no longer need to go into the office. And this has been proven.
Yes.
To be productive. Nobody needs to be in an office 5 days a week. Hybrid is the way forward. We live in a digital age. We have technology. We have AI. Yeah, sure, there's some jobs that, yes, you do need to be physically there if you're in hospitality and whatever. But I'm talking about the corporate world now. No, you do not need to be in the office 5 days a week. And if you're demanding that your staff come back 5 days a week, you need to look at your organization, your culture, not your people, because clearly there's some problems in your leadership. There's some problems in your management. There's not some problems in your teams and your people. And I just don't want us to see us go backwards, because I think for well-being, mental health, that's the good thing that came from COVID, was this work-life balance, quote, if that's a thing, but that blend between work and life came from that. And it was the best thing that ever happened to me, Dr. Marley, because I looked at my life, how I was living it, that constant rush, rush, rush. And I made some dramatic changes. I moved out to the suburbs. I now start my day in a completely different way. But it was the jolt. It was the wake-up call 5 years ago that called into question how I was living. And I don't want to see people go back to the way they were living before.
Exactly. And this is the thing, isn't it? It's like, that's such a good example that you've given. And I think a lot of people would really resonate with that. I mean, do you remember like pre-pandemic where a lot of people were saying, could I please work from home? Like, I actually work better. And a lot of workplaces were like, no. So it wasn't until that disruption happened, a disruption that we didn't want, that we resisted, where organizations did get a taste and people got to try out what their life was like and what they're even, I guess, give that evidence of what their performance is actually like when they are not sitting in traffic. How much time do we claw back? And, you know, maybe not being interrupted by, you know, colleagues all the time, maybe having to be at home a little bit more, have their pets, get you know, have that robot vacuum cleaner. That's me all the time working with my robot vacuum cleaner going on in the washing machine. And, you know, like there's so much can happen in terms of boosting your well-being as a result of being able to work from home more. But we didn't try it out until we had to try it out. So that's what I say in my book is like sometimes we don't know what we actually need until we try. So even in the book, I'm like, okay, you're feeling like this. Could you just ponder and consider why you could be feeling like that? And you might come up with a few different reasons and then kind of challenge yourself to try different things to see if what you're trying will change the way you feel. You know, so if you feel like you're overwhelmed, could you communicate with your boss and say, could I trial this for a little bit? You know, could I try this way of working for a little bit and see? It's almost like constantly doing little experiments to see if the new behavior or the new action can actually change how you feel. And it's different for everyone, but yeah, don't wait until, you know, you are disrupted by an illness because you've been stressed out for too long or you're having panic attacks now because you haven't been listening to the anxiety. Don't wait for that. Start listening to those signals now and see if you could do something about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is what people need to do, but they don't.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. I was having a conversation with a friend the other day and I challenged him because he was sort of saying he was really stressed at work and it got to a point where he was unwell, right? He'd got himself into quite a bad state. And I just said, look, how you're working is not sustainable. Like you don't need to be on call every single night of the week. Cause you're saying he doesn't sleep well. He hasn't slept well for 5 years, you know, cause he's expecting a call. So his body's waking him up every night. So that's happening. But when I tried to challenge him on it to say that's not sustainable, he said, yeah, but there's no one else that can do this. So I've just got to suck it up and I've got to do it.
Yeah.
And I said, well, something's got to change because look at you. Look at what you've got yourself into and what are you going to do about it now? And I think so many people, like, their work becomes their identity. They put a lot of weight into it and they think to themselves, well, I've got to do this. What choice do I have? And you've always got a choice. There's always a solution in the situation that the people find themselves in. But it's almost getting to a point where they have to put themselves first. Do you see that a lot of your, like, you know, clients and stuff, like people just, they have all the excuses of why things can't change and then they almost don't want to make the change?
Well, exactly. And it's not until they hit that wall, you know, and there's nothing like a pandemic, but even like a diagnosis, you know, like sometimes people, when they get diagnosed with something, then they have to do those things. But because they've done things every day, because we just become wired for what our behaviours and our actions are, very habitual creatures. So even when you're kind of trying to explore different ways of being, a lot of people can't because we're always doing tomorrow what we did yesterday unless we really thought about it. You just go back to doing what we do. We just kind of sleep, well, it's a terrible way of saying it, isn't it? A lot of us sleepwalk through life, just doing what we're programmed to do every single day without thinking, can we do it a little bit better? And if we don't stop to think about that and change it or get help or, yeah, something comes along, some life event to actually do that for us. And, you know, this is another reason why I wrote Crisis to Contentment, because I'm like, middle age is, even though I felt like I was becoming a grumpy old woman, and a lot of my clients were saying the same thing. They're like, why am I so grumpy all the time? You can start really thinking about, okay, what is that telling you, and do something about it now. So there's something about middle age where you start going, nah, I don't want to live like this anymore. I'm going to start changing it up a little bit. You know, I don't have to keep going on this pathway where I'm sleepwalking through life, doing things that, you know, my parents told me to do when I was like, you know, 14 and choosing my uni subjects. And I've just spent the next 20, 25 years, you know, being a lawyer or being a doctor. And hey, I don't even want to do that. What am I doing this for? And then that's where you start changing things up. But if you don't have that disruption, people will just go through the course of their life doing things that they don't really want to do and yeah, either burning themselves out or just being miserable and a bit meh about life. You don't live life like that.
No way. Life is just so precious, and it's so sad when I have these conversations with the people that I love the most, but it's so easy to get yourself in a rut.
Oh my
gosh. It's really, really easy to get yourself feeling stuck, like, I don't know what to do in these situations. And I think one of the first things that I did, and I'd love to get your opinion and thoughts on this, is just actually look at what I was focusing on. Because I realized when I was in that state of anxiety and life in the fast lane, I was focusing on expectations I had of myself and others, goals I needed to achieve, things I needed to do. Didn't stop to think about all the things I already had in my life. The gratitude, the friendship, the, you know, the good job, the good money I was earning. Like, it was always what's next, what's next. It was never contentment. It was always go, 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 go. Led me down a path of being quite unwell. Whereas now I just, if I'm in a funk or if I'm in a sort of a weird mood, you know, sometimes you wake up and you just go, oh, I just don't feel like me today. Because generally I'd say I'm quite an optimistic person, but I have my moments for sure, like everyone does. But it's often I just sort of sit there in the morning and go, what am I focused on? And it's often something that happened yesterday or maybe a week ago, or maybe it's something that I have no control of or something my family's done. And I'm like, oh, I'm giving all my power away focusing on that as opposed to what I can control and what I'm grateful for and what I appreciate in my life and all the good. Yeah. And I think there's always the good, but there's always the bad. So how important is where we place our attention in our lives? What does that do for our overall well-being and psychology?
Oh, I mean, but the thing is, if we don't pay attention, our brain will just automatically focus on the negative. It just because of that negativity bias that we have. So a lot of us will just be driven, like we'll sit in that space. And I mean, think about, I mean, I'm sure a lot of your listeners, they'll come home from work of a day and talk about all the stuff that went wrong rather than what went right, because we just automatically do that, don't we? Or when we see our friends, we like talk about the gossipy bits and all the things that, you know, all the, you know, one of the bad things that have happened rather than starting with the awesome stuff. But it is like if we don't consciously, purposefully acknowledge the good stuff, your brain will by default, again, it served our ancestors really well to be looking for the lions and tigers rather than the butterflies and waterfalls. In today's world, if you want more of a content life, you have to leave room for all of the emotions and allow them to happen, but do something with them. And to your point, I think when we have an emotion, whatever it is, particularly if it's a negative one, so I think when it's a good one, we shouldn't dismiss it because it's just, you know, we should kind of savor it. But if it is one of those perceived negative emotions, you really should look at it and kind of go, oh, okay, so have that self-awareness and go, can I do something about this? And then that's where you can slip into that problem-solve mode and do something. Might be communicate with someone about something or, you know, stop doing a particular behavior. So do something about it. Other times it is you're kind of challenging the thoughts and the feelings a little bit and kind of, you might be able to reframe it. You might be able to challenge it. You might be able to do something with the thinking to change the way you feel. And it might be gratitude. Like, can you do something about it, the way you're thinking and flip it a little bit or notice that you've got something wrong in the way you're interpreting something that's happened? Or you can do some sort of self-care, you know, go for a run, go for a walk, pat the dog, put some music on. There's something that can shift that emotion. But you have to work at it, don't you? Because automatically, if you don't attend to that emotion, your brain will automatically habitually go to what you normally do, and that's probably relish in the negative far too long.
Yeah, I honestly have to think about my mind like a garden, and I'm constantly just pulling out the weeds, planting new seeds, and it's a daily thing. And this is what people don't realize, is that you don't just suddenly become a happier, more fulfilled, content person. It is a daily discipline. It is being aware of your thoughts, your emotions, dealing with stuff as it comes up. Like it's the ongoing journey of overcoming yourself. And people want the pill. They want the quick fix. They want the one therapy session to be like, oh, that's why I'm the way I am. Now I'm healed. It doesn't work like that. You would know. I mean, how many patients have you seen time and time again? You work on something else comes up. Oh, didn't realize I was still dealing with that. It's ongoing. It's like going to the gym. We don't just go to the gym for a week and then we have the body of our dreams.
Well,
it's a daily discipline, isn't it?
It's a daily discipline. And as we know, and you would in your profession know this to be true, is that when you're living a psychologically rich life, sometimes it's really hard. Like I know with a lot of the work I'm not happy all the time. Like happiness is like a fleeting emotion. There's some things I do with my work is like I'm standing on stage and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so scared right now. Or I'll take a risk with my business and be a little bit worried. There's times where I've overworked and I'm feeling like quite stressed or a relative is unwell and I'm upset or someone's passed away and I'm really connected to and that I love that I'm going to grieve for. So, and this is going to happen to all of us. If we're fully in life, we're going to be passionate about things, aren't we? And we're going to be happy about things and we're going to lose people that we love and we're going to grieve and we're going to be fearful at times if we're jumping fully in life. So it's not about happiness. Happiness is one of like so many different emotions. So we've got to leave room for it all. Like I'm sure there's times, Georgie, when you're like really angry about something and you don't want to hang back in life and just want a happiness feel because you're going to miss the depth of life if you just want happy, happy, joy, joy. You're going to miss out on the real stuff which is what makes a psychologically rich life, isn't it? It's contentment, not happiness, that we just need to be content with what is, even if some things are bloody hard to deal with in life.
Mm-hmm. I know. And I think it's all about just becoming an adult, isn't it? And there's a quote that says, pain is inevitable, struggle is optional. And I think we're all going to go through pain. We're going to lose someone we love. We might get a health problem. We might, you know, something's going to happen in our lives. It's going to cause us pain, right? We can't escape that. But it's how we respond. It's how long we marinate in it. It's the stories we tell ourselves. It's what we choose to focus on. And that, I think, has such big consequences on our overall health and well-being. And that's, I think, it's for me now, it's like, if I'm having a bad day or whatever, like I just try and shorten now the feelings of anger or frustration of irritation. I go, I don't want to feel like this most of the time. I'm accepting that I'm feeling it right now. I'm having my moment and I'm dealing with it. But then what am I going to do about it? Because I don't want to stay like this in tomorrow, the next day, the next week, the next month, the next year, and then live my life in this miserable, bitter way.
Yeah,
like, I'm a human being. I'm having a human emotion right now. But now what am I going to do about it? Am I going to sit here and ponder on it and fester in it? Or am I actually going to be like, acknowledge it? Why do I feel it this way? Oh yeah, that situation is really annoying actually and 100% the right response to it. But how long am I going to keep dwelling on that and overthinking that? What action do I now need to take to move forward?
Exactly.
And I think that's what people don't do. They just marinate in it for too long.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. That marinates you. It's very food orientated, isn't it?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But look, just we've covered so much ground and it's just such an important topic right now. But let's just say there's someone listening to this podcast right now. I was trying to think of my audience and they've hit the midlife, whatever, you know, say they're in their 40s and kids starting to grow up. They don't need them anymore. Like, you know, they're sort of starting to get a bit more time back and they're sort of feeling maybe like, oh, like a little bit lost, maybe a little bit like, oh, what's next for me? What are some like things that they can do to feel that more contentment that you write about? What are some things that you advise? What are some things that you do as well to make yourself just lean into that contentment as opposed to focusing on all the things that we don't have and the sort of more negative or lower vibration emotions that we all experience?
Well, I mean, after that self-awareness is I really kind of try to hit home in the book is that you got to listen to those emotions because they're telling you powerful things. And then I get people to really consider why they could be feeling like that. So, for example, I find a lot of people at midlife are a little bit like ho-hum about their career. So they're like, maybe I'm halfway through life. Like, do I really want to keep being this, you know, like this career that I've done for the last 20 years and I've kind of stuck with maybe far too long? Maybe it's time to change it up a little bit. So I say to people, like, tap into the wisdom of those emotions, like, and also the wisdom of what you have learned so far in your life. And sometimes there's things that start creeping up a little bit, kind of going, well, you know, when I was 10, I used to love drawing or I used to love music and I've never had time to do that. So I think if you start listening to those emotions and feeling them, pondering and wondering parts of you that may have kind of been dormant for so long because you've been on this socially prescribed pathway, there's almost an awakening that I feel happens at midlife when you start clawing back some time. So even myself, I'm like, no, I'm halfway through life. Like, do I really want to be a psychologist anymore? Should I try something different? Like, I wouldn't mind opening a bookstore or, you know, a bookstore that's a bar, you know, like all these crazy ideas are coming up going, is there things I could try? You know, like, so I think there's this mentality where you're like, okay, this is my second act where I've kind of maybe sleptwalked a little bit for the first kind of 30, 40 years. Oh, what could I try now? Like for some people, they might have a little bit more money or maybe they've got less money, but they're separated from their partner. So there's a lot of change that happens where you're like, I've got a bit more time. Maybe I want to start partying again, or maybe I want to go out with my friends a little bit more because the kids are a little bit older, or maybe I want to try this side hustle business because I've been working in corporate for like 25 years and I'm a bit sick of that. So it's actually getting these ideas and trying them out a little bit and seeing if anything kind of sparks inside of you. And I actually have a big chapter on nostalgia because I'm really big into tapping into those parts of our life from the past that might be massive clues to who you really are that has been laying dormant for far too long, and bring that into now.
I'm smiling as you're speaking because I think there's so much truth in that. And I love what you said about, you know, like second sort of parts of life. And I sort of think life comes in chapters. And I know I'm in a chapter right now in life where I'm in my building years of like setting myself up financially for the future. So I can have a bit more free time and some spare cash to sort of like explore other things as well down the track. And one of the things that when you were saying that, I sort of smiled, like as a young girl, I used to just write for hours. I used to love writing, creating stories and things. And I've always said, there's a book in me, but I don't have the time to sit. I've got, you know, and of course I do. I can just prioritize it, but it would mean something else would have to give. And I'm like, what would be that thing? It's like trying to just keep, remember where I'm at in my season and chapter of life right now, which is the building. And not overwhelm myself by putting more into it. But 100%, I know that I used to love, I just lock myself in my room as a young girl and just write stories for hours. And I think, well, there's definitely a book in me at some point in my future.
Yes.
As a writer, as somebody that's wants to help. I think I want to help people. I want to teach. I used to play schools as a kid.
Oh, yes.
You know, do you know what I mean? Like whiteboard. I'd sit my brother down. I'd be like, right, Ollie.
Yes.
You're the pupil, I'm the teacher, that, you know?
Yeah. I had a chalkboard though, so I'm a bit older.
I think I had one of them as well. But I'm guessing this is what you're saying, is that like we all did these things and I was probably a little bit bossy as a child, but you know, maybe that was the wrong word. Maybe it was just like, I want to help, I want to teach, I want to inform. And exactly. Yeah, it's definitely in that in me.
Mm. It is. I feel, and I see this a lot, is I think there's a lot of creativity in a lot of us that just got not shut down so much, but I think most of us have this creativity, whether it's kind of music or writing or some sort of creating, mm-hmm. that, you know, back then, mm-hmm. schools didn't, I don't, maybe they just didn't value it as much, or society want, you know, kind of made us go on for more of an academic tangent. So I think when I work with a lot of people, because a lot of my, you know, similar to what we're talking about before, kind of high performing individuals that just kind of like were doing very well at high school and then just went straight to uni and then they did the thing that they're doing now. And then they get to kind of their 30s and 40s and are like, I used to love doing painting, but they just didn't for whatever reason and just picked, you know, law or medicine or finance or commerce or something and left those parts of them behind. And they start thinking about them again when they get a little bit more time back as adults. So, you know, so they start lighting things up that have been doing nothing for so long. So listen to that, because it's telling you something.
Yeah, I definitely have started to. And, you know, I've got the idea for the book already in my mind of what it was going to be on. It's going to be around career confidence, basically, like 12 years of recruitment, yes. interviewing amazing people like yourselves on this podcast, all the wisdom that they've got to share, stories from my own life and how we can help people step up into their own careers, their own lives, and just have more of that sort of like self-belief, know themselves, values, all those things that I'm really passionate about. So there's definitely a book like that in me, for sure. But it's, I guess it's like final thing before we sort of wrap up and conscious of time, but it's like, people also say that, you know, well, Georgie, this is all great, but I've got a mortgage to pay and I've got kids to put through school and I can't just stop working and be an artist and write all day. Like, I've got to earn money, I've got to live. And that is a fair point. You know, I think we get accustomed to a certain type of lifestyle as well. We don't want to downsize. We don't want to drive around in a little car when we're used to driving around something nice. All these things come into play and it's like we jeopardize our, I guess, happiness in the now for maybe a future that might not exist. It's so interesting, isn't it, where my mind goes sometimes. Like sometimes I check in with myself and go, am I living the life I want, or am I living someone else's version of success?
Yeah, but you got to be realistic as well, don't you? Mm. Like, obviously I'm still a psychologist because I'm talking to you. I'm not running my bar.
By the way, I want to come to this bar. Books and beer and bubbles, I'm in.
No, I know. But we're allowed to dream. We're allowed to dream. But I still believe in there's little things that we could schedule in. You know, there's no way at the moment I would be able to, you know, go, oh, I'm just going to start a new business and quit this job. Like, it's just not going to happen, is it? Like, really? But there's certainly little things that I can start doing, you know, whether it's kind of reading things or, you know, over time changing my business so that I could start doing something different. You know, there's little things that we can all do in our schedule where we could do more of something and less of something else. Mm-hmm. So it's about being conscious. You know, mm-hmm. it might be another, and it could be like a 10-minute getting up a little bit more just so that you have the slow morning that we were talking about before. It's just putting your alarm on for another 15 minutes. It's going for a walk in a park and just doing some mindful moments so you can check in with yourself and notice how you're feeling and kind of think about what you could do to change that. For mm-hmm. some people, it might be, you know, making sure that they're conscious about always seeing a friend once a week somewhere. You know, but those little things make a massive difference to our psyche. Mm.
1,000,000%. And I think we're wired to see progress as well. So, if we've got a goal, so if my goal is to write a book one, you know, well, not even a goal, my dream, you know, what I like to do is write a book one day. If I've got a book in me, it's like, we'll start with a little blog and just release like a little blog every couple of weeks. Or for you, start a book club and invite people around for wine and, you know,
exactly.
And it's like, have a bar in your own home to start with. And then, do you know what I mean? It's like you can integrate your dreams into the life now. They don't have to be exactly as you imagine it, but it could be a little taste of something. And then your mind goes, oh, I can see how this can happen now. And that sort of reinforcement encourages you to keep going and to keep dreaming and keep believing.
Exactly.
And I think that can make you a more happy, content, fulfilled person if you know your life's going in the direction that you want it to go, as opposed to feeling stuck and helpless in the now. So
Sure. And even I've said to people, you know, like, and I've done it myself, is that when it's just almost like an impossible day where it's actually just full and I can't move anything, you know, at the end of the day, when I'm kind of just winding down, instead of choosing an unhelpful piece of rubbish on TV, I might, you know, do a masterclass or something, you know, where I'm being inspired by someone or watching a TED talk or, you know, even following someone on Instagram who's done the thing that I would love to do in the future. Mm-hmm. So I sit in inspiration of others in a very passive way because I might not have any energy left. But instead of, doing something that's going to zap my brain, you know, kill my brain cells, I will choose to be inspired by, and it's usually, funnily enough, you know, some amazing woman out, you know, global woman who's done something amazing. It's usually a, you know, like a famous author or, you know, someone who's doing something already. And I'm just passively seeping it in. So it's getting embedded in what I'm doing. And, you know, so again, it's little choices that we can make throughout the day. It doesn't have to be these massive leaps. And we're only going to be content if we quit our job and, you know, have all the time in the world and all the money in the world to do the thing that we all have always wanted to do. That's not realistic and it's not going to happen for most of us. We're certainly, most of us, and I'm sure every listener on the call is not going to win lotto, I promise you that. But doesn't mean there's not little things that we can do to shift how we feel throughout the day.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Dr. Marnie, you are just such a wonderful person to speak to. Both of your books have been life-changing for so many people. And I just want to thank you for coming on again and giving up your time. I know you've got a really full schedule and, but you know, what you're doing in the world is really making a difference and people need professionals like you now more than ever. So thank you for writing these books. Thank you for helping people. It really is important. And, you know, I'll get you back on when you start your bar and, you know, maybe I'll be your
first. Can we do a bar chat? Probably not very healthy. Maybe I need to think about something.
No, I love it, you know. Books, beer and bubbles. I love it.
Yes, I love it. Actually, the name of it. Perfect.
Where can I send people to connect more with you and find out more about what you're doing?
Well, I'm on all the social media, as you know, so I'm on Instagram and LinkedIn, and I've got my website, marnielishman.com.au, and yeah, I'm in the bookstores, all good bookstores.
You certainly are. I've seen them and I can't wait to get stuck in to your new book. So thank you so much for coming on today. It's a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you've got this far, that honestly means the world to me and lets me know that you've got a lot of value from today's episode. So if I could just ask you to do one thing, pull out your phone and please leave a quick review. It honestly would mean the world to me. It will help this podcast grow and get our message out there to more people. So if you could do that for me, that would be amazing. And please reach out and just let me know what you want to hear more about, what you're interested in. It will just also help me make sure that I'm continuing to speak to topics that are relevant and also find guests that are real true experts in what you want to know more about. So have an amazing day. Thanks so much for doing that. And I can't wait to share the next episode with you.